hope you check your firearms. Sure. We have Representative Joe McGill from Dillingham, who chair the meeting. He's the chairman of the Resource Committee in the House. And Representative Clem Tillian from Halibut Cove, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the House. We have the governor.
Mr. Representative Tillian, I'm McGill.
Joe McGill.
Joe McGill. Thank you.
We have Les Shepherd here, who is administrative assistant to the Labor and Management for me in the House.
They know me.
And also, I might say, this is the first place out of Juneau we've held public hearings on this particular bill. There's a lot of interest in this bill, as you can see. And we have a representative from the governor's office here. We just found this out last night. She's going to be here this morning. This is Judy Frackle. So we'll turn the meeting over to Joe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Eliason. Well, I'm glad that I could be here. And I figure having kind of an informal meeting. And I'm real good to see that there's a good turnout. It's kind of disheartening a lot of times when you travel a distance and no one shows up for the meeting yet. More legislations and you do have people. So I'm real glad to see a good turnout. We'll start the meeting off with testimony on the limited entry legislation. And I want to, before we start, I'd like to say that we will stay here and take testimony and answer questions if we can, even if we have to stay all night, because after coming this far, we want to get all the information we can. And we have some other legislations or other questions that we'll take up after we get done with the limited entry. Sure. We can start off right on that taking testimony. And any written testimony or that you have, you can give to me. And if anything, and if anyone wants to send a written testimony to me afterwards, well, I'll leave my address and you can send it. Or send it to Representative Eliason. And I assure you, we'll work close together on this. And whoever wants to give testimony, just sit right up here with us and listen to your testimony and see what you have to say. So I hope that someone wants to give testimony. Give their opinions on it. Yes, could you present yourself, say so?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am a member of the Fish and Game Advisory Board, Sitka, and at a special meeting of Roy the Bean. At a special meeting of the Fish and Game Advisory Board on February 6, 73, to discuss recommendations to the legislature for limited entry to Alaskan fishery, the following questions were voted on. Number one, question, how many present are in favor of some form of limited entry? There were 7-4, 2 against, and 1 abstain. Question number two, motion to increase gear permit fees with any excess over $50 of each permit to go into fishery rehabilitation. 9-4, 1 against. Question number three, motion to support a point system to determine gear permits. 7-4, 1 against. The board plans to meet February 13, 1973 to work on out details of a point system. Question, motion to recommend a full-scale rehabilitation program in conjunction with the limited entry bill. There were 8-4. These, we'd like to enter into the minutes of the board. I think, I don't know if you've got a copy of it.
I already do, and thank you.
This is from the Sitka Fish and Game Advisory Board. Okay.
They're on the tape, and now I have them right in to them. Thank you
very much.
Could we keep you here for a minute for a couple of questions? Do you have any specifics on those that oppose the limited entry program?
On the limited entry, the one that opposed, or the two that opposed, felt that there should be no form of limited entry, since we're all American citizens, that we should all, if we so desire, if we want to fish commercially or in the sport field, have the right to do so. Any other questions?
No, that'll do for now. I hope some of them speak up.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. So anyone else wishes to testify? Could you step up and identify yourself?
My name is Mark Jacobs, Jr. I come from a long line of family of fishermen. I have a rough draft of my statements as far as the limited entry into commercial fisheries is concerned. I would like to keep this rough draft and reduce it to a type form and then file it with the appropriate agencies and representatives. I recognize the need for legislation to curtail the annual increases in gear registration. Don't get me wrong, I am opposed to certain provisions in the bill. How best to do this is a dilemma. It appears past efforts have failed. The previous effort was called gear limitation and was beaten down. On this point alone, effort to make the present sponsor a hero is a farce. Unless you can accept the fact that the previous effort was a statement concerned for the fisheries situation. Past efforts to curtail outsiders by area licensing and make an earlier registration and then in person has not hindered the outsider, but has had adverse effects on the resident fishermen. The recent amendment to the state constitution, Article 8, and I notice it said 17, I was under the assumption that the amendment was to Article 15. I will make further reference to this in my comments relating to HB 138 relating to salmon farming. I believe any license freeze can be struck down by the courts. My understanding is the proposed entry permit is not a gear license, but a permit that is issued to a person in perpetuity that is renewable annually for the lifetime of the holder. It may be sold or transferred to next of kin or a friend under regulations to be determined. I view the present proposal to be basically the same in intent as the previous gear limitation. Only the present proposal takes more drastic steps and more people will be hurt. I realize a criteria has been proposed as to who shall and shall not be issued a permit. This then calls for very stringent regulations to be created by a powerful commission who will have quasi-judicial powers in decisions and enforcement. Can anybody say that this commission, which will be politically appointed, be free of partisan or political taint? Personally, I cannot be convinced it will be free of politics. Proposal would allow the commission to evaluate who is dependent upon fisheries and who is not. It appears that one's income is largely from other sources than commercial fishing. The commission may then say, you are not dependent upon fishing for a livelihood and are not eligible for a permanent permit. It must be remembered, economic trends play a vital part. Example, the Trans-Alaska pipeline will draw those normally dependent upon fishing to construction jobs for 2 or 3 years. After the boom is over, he will have nothing to turn to for a livelihood. What then will be the criteria for so-called grandfather rights? A highly controversial bill such as this will only be the object of frequent and numerous amendments. Drastic changes will no doubt completely change its entire and original purpose. In other words, destroy its original intent. When this begins to happen, then a complete repeal is the only answer. Why has the Department of Fish been so deep to deprive the fishermen on hearing low harvest? I understand that Fish and Game contends that it does not adversely affect herring population, or herring is not the dependent food of supply of salmon. Yet it's a known fact that the Lower Chatham Straits area had the most abundant supply of herring, along with abundant king salmon, responsible for the establishment of the city of Port Alexander, the capital of commercial trawlers. However, with the concentration of herring seiners and herring plants, the overfishing of herring resulted in depletion of king salmon, and you cannot deny that Port Alexander today is a ghost town. A total ban on commercial harvest of herring roe and a terrible waste of failing herring, then processing only the roe, should be the first priority. Let the total ban on herring roe for commercial purposes be eliminated first. The effects of limited entry would be virtually a halt to the marketing of fishing boats and gear. Even though the entry permits apply to the individual holder and not to his boat or gear, he will have no means of upgrading his boat or gear because there will not be sufficient numbers of new entrants into the fisheries to absorb the boat building market. The result is you might as well fish your old boat till it falls apart. I believe the American commercial fisherman is the most abused professional of any field. He virtually has no voting impact on national policies. The small number of importers has more lobbying powers than all the fishermen put together. Fishermen is the most heavily taxed. Now, for the proposal of an annual fee plus the possibility of 12% royalty rate on your own personal fishing gear, and let's see the taxes. The annual fee as proposed is $50. Boat license, gear license, personal license enters into the picture. Then canned salmon tax, raw fish tax, federal state income tax, tax on fuels and groceries. A number of other taxes enter into the picture. If this legislation of limited entry is really worried about the economic well-being of the fishermen, then it should concern itself with this tax gouging of fishermen's income.
Okay, well, thank you. Does anyone else wish to testify?
Take these fish, and they lose their entire livelihood, and they still have the harvest on the high seas.
Pardon me, but could you stick to the contents of this limited entry? We'll take up high seas fishing at some other time. You know, it's a different subject. That's the sore point with me, too, but I would like to get this one subject out of the way before we start on to the other.
It's a constitutional right for anyone who wants to enter into business for himself to do so. And if he fails, he falls on his face, he can start over or he can forget about entering into it. It's not in the rules of a democracy, as far as I can see, for anyone, for the government to come in and enter in and say, you can take this or you can't fish or you can fish. I don't see where we have to limit the entry into the fishery, but increase the amount of fish, and this would be done through what I was just talking about in the foreign fisheries thing here. Now, you have many people who own commercial boats that won't be allowed to fish. You have teachers that have boats. You have construction men that have boats. Now, they have these boats. What are they going to do with these boats when they can't fish? They're going to become a property tax thing on them. I saw no provision for compensation to these. Is there? I mean, I don't know who to ask.
You can ask me.
Is there any compensation for?
Well, not in the bill that presently is, but we intend to. That's what we're looking for, suggestions and amendments. And just find out what the people's feeling is.
Well, until there's support for compensation for this thing, or, you know, I can't see any support for the bill until it's as it is.
You got something? No, I could. I'll make a few remarks when the testimony is over, unless you want them now.
You just look kind of impatient.
The thing that's rough is that there are many of us that realize there have to be some drastic changes to the governor's bill, and we'll get into that here today. I certainly think there has to be buyback, there has to be compensation. You don't take a right away from a person without compensating them for it. We have legislation already being designed for that. What we have to get into is to find out how much of a support for the idea of limited entry there is among the
How can we support if we don't know exactly what the bill is going to be? I mean, could you give us a quick rundown on, say, different examples of how it would affect individual cases? I mean, you're quite aware of the content of the bill. I believe a lot of us, the first time that we actually see this bill before. Specific examples and state on whether it's going to be a licensing of those who have fished for a certain period of years? Is the license going to apply to the boat, or is it going to apply to the individual or the family? And how, in effect, will the license be transferred to a new person, say, if this person should die or this family should quit fishing and things like that?
Yeah, Mr. Killian.
I'll run through a few of the things, and that'll start the discussion. First off, I'm a Republican that's usually critical of the administration, and one thing I'll have to say in all support of the governor here is he's opened a very tough subject, and he's had the guts to drop a bill and lay it before you. The fact that we're going to change the bill doesn't mean that I don't admire that, because it's a subject that has to be opened. I agree that I'd like to be fairly lenient about who gets the first permit. I support, and I think you'll see in coming legislation, a buyback fund. I want the license to be on the fisherman, not on the boat, so that a young man who has an entry permit, and I'd say in some cases you'll have an entry permit for, say, two fisheries. I want to include, incidentally, I want the bill to include all fisheries. You can't just include salmon without immediately over-harvesting some other species. We have a few areas, such as the shrimp, to the westward in Alaska, that if we passed a limited entry bill now, it would solve the problems that you're facing in the salmon industry before they appeared. I don't think that you'll see anyone squeezed out that isn't compensated. I personally would oppose any bill that didn't. I don't think that you'll see your sports commercial competing against a power troller. I think that each type of fisheries is going to have to be limited in its group. There will be, in this case, buyback assessments. I would not see a board that had the power to play God. I'd see a board that had two powers, to set the optimum number and to administer the buyback. I'd see a buyback fund that we would appropriate approximately $5 million to start the fund, and then the buyback would have to keep the fund afloat, and that we would endeavor to buy fishermen out of the industry, and any time that the state bought a license, we'd destroy it. On the other hand, I'd like to see a little moratorium for the commission to get things set up. Say it might be 2 years before licenses become readily transferable. I personally think then that the attorneys from the Attorney General's office back us up on this, that the only way that you can make it constitutional, if eventually licenses are readily transferable. When you retire, you may sell your license, your right to participate in the fishery. People say it hasn't been done before. Anybody can become a farmer. You have to buy a farm. We once had a time when oil was unlimited. Now we say you have to have a lease for so many acres of land before you can drill a well, because it was so wasteful under the other method that it just became impossible to continue it. You can look at your open range. What you are today is like the cowboy was at the time of the end of open range, 1914. And there was some bitter feelings at that time. But on the other hand, open range was turning the United States into a desert. What we have to face up to is the fact that the harvest of the seas has come up 400% in the last 10 years. At the same time, the United States has dropped from second to eighth place in the world fisheries, and we now import up to 70% of the fisheries products consumed in the United States. That you just can't afford to see it continue to go this route. Of the $2.4 billion deficit the United States had last year, $900 million was in fishery products alone. And you can say, well, we'll curtail the importation of those products. But how do you curtail the importations of products to a country? For instance, Japan buys more soybeans from the United States than the total salmon pack on the Pacific coast is worth. Her salmon egg purchase exceeds the value of all the halibut landed, both in Canada and here. Iceland exports fishery products into the United States. Canada does. If you think that you're going to stop these imports, you're just not going to do it. You might inhibit them in some areas. What you're going to have to face up to is if the United States is going to produce the fish that it eats, it's going to have to give up the idea of a common property. And the problem with a common property is just like your campground, state campground, nobody bothers to clean up because it belongs to everybody. And the problem of an open fishery is that everybody thinks he has the right to take without any obligation to replace. As soon as it becomes a limited entry fishery, then you'll see some real conservation-minded fishermen, especially if you have recommendations in there that if you're caught up the creek or fishing during a closed period, that's one state license, you don't have to buy back, you just take it from him. He's no longer a fisherman. I'd say that you have to have some way for your young to enter. The Canadian system was hooked to boats that I don't particularly like, and they didn't have any safeguards about canneries getting control, which I'd like to see in ours. But don't you think for a minute that the Canadian system hasn't been a success? Because for one thing, instead of the average age of a fisherman in British Columbia being 55, it's now 28. And instead of fishing an old bunch of junkers for that Fraser River gill netting, they have some very modern vessels, because a young man now sees that there's some future for him. He can feed a family at it. And this year, the Canadians got to fish 4 days a week on their side of the line at Juan de Fuca. Our boys got to fish 2 12-hour periods. When the Canadians had their big dog run, they delivered in Puget Sound at 17 cents a pound. Our boys had been getting 45 and just flat broke the American fishery. And if you think an unlimited fishery can operate alongside of a limited entry fishery, it will just be bankrupt by any limited entry fishery. The Japanese once said to me that if we'd allowed an unlimited entry into the North Pacific, we'd have gone bankrupt long ago. By limiting it to a number we knew could make a profit, we guaranteed that the Americans will always face competition from the Japanese. I think we can beat them at their own game if we go at it right. But does this open some of the subjects? You know, I'd like to get some controversy from the floor so that we can start answering a few questions. We'll have some budget increases, but the University of Alaska program that showed that if we really put a massive effort in, we can increase our fishery production 50%, at the same time to expect a 60% increase in fishing. So until you shut off the new entry, I don't think you're going to get the legislature to appropriate large amounts for stream rehabilitation. Right now, it costs more to operate the Department of Fish and Game than the total taxes collected from the fishing industry. And when you start coming in for a budget increase to a man from Fairbanks or Anchorage, he looks at you as if you're off your trolley. And so if we're going to, you know, I believe that we have to make a massive effort for stream rehab, but it's got to be after limited entry. I wouldn't even bother with it before.
Yeah, we didn't never did get your, I wish anyone wishes to discuss anything would come up so we can get it on tape. I could barely hear your question. I don't
know. We can't get it. Clem, if you would repeat the question, get the man's name, repeat the question, we could get on.
Well, I think it's better if you come up here if he wants to talk, and then we can pick it up on the tape.
As a matter of fact, Andy, it might inhibit a few people that would want a single question.
You've got five groups here, and you're going to have a lot of turmoil for somebody to trying to get down in the pipe.
Maybe you could repeat the question as it's come, or you as the as it comes in.
Lost my train of thought, Clem, and I'm trying to pick it up again. Less interrupted me. I'll get it up back in a minute.
There's a man back there.
Where's he at?
I take exception with your statement that the fishermen are not interested in conservation. I don't think that you, fishermen here or anywhere else in Alaska would hesitate 15 seconds to say yes to the 3 cent, 4 cent, 5 cent for all fish tax if we could be assured it's going to go into the fishery. And that's the whole thing. If we could earmark these funds, I don't think there's a fisherman in the state that wouldn't say yes to the all fish tax if that money was going to go into rehabilitation of fishermen.
Hey, you want a repeating? There's no other way.
What is your name, sir?
Tom Williams.
Tom Williams is not objecting to a limited fishery if. What was it?
Well, his big objection is with my statement that the fishermen aren't really the conservationists they ought to be, that none of the fishermen would probably object to a raw fish tax that was dedicated to stream rehab.
I didn't say anything. I said fisheries rehabilitation.
All right. Fisheries rehabilitation. Number one, you have a constitutional prohibition against special funds. The thing I've found, that whether a fisherman likes to admit it or not, I don't think any of you would argue that a sharecropper doesn't take anywhere near as good a care of the land as the farmer that owns it. And no matter how much you might be conservation-minded, and I've been a fisherman all my life, I'll tell you, there's a big difference when you own a share of it. You'd find that the fishermen would be willing to tax themselves for things in a small area if it was handled by the area. And I just, it's very noticeable in Canada, in the maritime provinces where they've had quite a bit of lobster poaching and stuff, that when the limited entry went in, this stopped. Because then it was no longer somebody poaching off of the Nova Scotia's waters or eastern Canada's waters. It was somebody, the lobster fisherman said, that's somebody taking lobster from me. And they weren't afraid to testify and talk and put the finger on him and wipe him out of the fishery. And what I'm saying is you'll get more of a conservation-minded fisherman when he has a real concrete part of the action. On the other hand, you've got to face up to the fact that in years to come, you're going to have to pay a tax because the fisheries belong to all the people in Alaska, and the man from Fairbanks is entitled to a return on his, too. You know, if he can't join in the fishery, he's got to at least be able to pick up something from the taxes. And so this whole system that we have today is changing, and it's not an easy change, but it's not any different than Ohio, where it must have been hard for the person who could homestead new land when he needed a new farm to face up to the fact that this is all over. And from then on, if you want a farm, you buy one. Well, after this passes, there's nothing that prohibits you becoming a fisherman, but you're going to have to buy an entry permit from somebody else to get in.
My name's Laura Hunter, and I've had guys jumping on me all day today, and the last Thursday week, so I'm finally interested. I'll be 60 years old my next birthday, and I've fished ever since I was 11 years old, commercially. And I've never yet seen any state or group of states come up with any way that they could legislate the fish into being. They're going to half of your fisheries are controlled by your weather, and half of the other half is by your predators that eat the fish up. And the more you let sea lions grow and all the rest of these things come along, they're going to have their share of the fish too. And they're better fishermen than we are. I'd like to say that I'm going to go along with what the fishermen agree on. But this man over here that was talking about this fish tax, down in Oregon and Washington, you have a poundage tax. And they found out down there that was the most fair way to finance a fish hatchery program. And fact is, in the commercial fishing down there, 90% of their money comes from the poundage tax and the commercial fish license and the landing permit. The sport fisherman license and the sport hunting license down in that country just go for trout farms and game farms and for law enforcement. I don't think you're going to have any success of getting the loggers or the oil companies or the farmers or anybody else to willingly finance the fishing industry. We're going to have to finance that ourselves. And we're going to have to come up with some way and means of doing it. Some of the boys had some ideas about a $300 license, and some had a $100 license. Well, it doesn't make any difference. You could make the license $10,000. And there are individuals that can come up with that amount of money. And there's a lot of fishermen up here in Alaska and all over the Northwest that think that they are going to be the only ones left that are going to be fishing because they've got a large boat and they're more efficient. Well, I've got news for you. There's a lot more efficient fishermen and a lot more efficient boats that can be built and can come up here and take this fishing over under this present bill because they can prove they're more efficient than we are. And the big operator is going to be right down with the skiff fisherman. He's going to be obsolete. You know yourself, we got people coming in here two or three times a week in these orange-colored trawlers. And there's nothing to say that they can't come in here under this new deal and prove they're more efficient than we are and get a fishing license, maybe by paying $10,000 and put us all out of business. They've almost done it now. I think this way, until the time that we can get our federal government and our state governments to put these jokers out beyond the 200-mile limit or off of the continental shelf, and there's a law already in effect that can be used for that purpose of the fish. All they have to do is apply the fisheries to it. And I'm talking about the Truman Law that concerns the mining and oil drilling on the continental shelf. Now that is a law, and the fisheries can be applied to it, and Congress just has to apply it. That's all there is to it. There's no reason for a lot of this hassle of putting people out of business or taking their livelihood. You know yourself that in this day and age, that 90% of those people, I don't care what kind of work you do, you can't make a living at your craft unless your wife gets out and helps support you. So you have to do different things in order to make a living. Of course, me, I'm older and I don't work much anymore. I'm not worth much, but I hate to see people legalized out of their own rights as an American citizen. We say that we talk about the freedom of the sea, and now we're going to have freedom pretty soon to where we can't even go look at the ocean, let alone be on it. Let's use some common sense. Let's get some financing to support fish hatchery. You're not going to get it by just planting streams. Oregon and Washington have built up their fishing industry a whole lot from what it was 10 years ago. I know, I used to fish down there. And I know fishermen down there that you would consider up here day fishermen because they made $5,000 or $6,000 a year the last year and the year before that made $15,000 and $20,000. Well, you can take it from there, but from my side of it, I think we ought to let the fishermen run the fish business and the loggers run the logging and so on. I don't believe in legislating anybody out of his way of life. And as far as making compensation, how are you going to compensate somebody for something he's been all his life at? Put him on the shelf and do like Canada and put him on welfare?
Could we hold just a minute? I wanted to